prediction, but it's not against any policies or you know, wrong. But I don't know, maybe you disagree. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin, Gunn's listeners in Letterkenny and Remelton joins him now. Hi, Seamus. Lovely to see you again.
Good morning, Greg. How are we?
I'm doing fantastic, actually.
Happy May Day to everybody there.
Happy May Day. I can't wait for the May the 4th be with you jokes that come up every single year in about 3 days' time. Right, so we have another flotilla heading towards Gaza, the Global Summit Flotilla. And there's quite a lot of local interest in relation to this. There's certainly one girl, lady, I think she was in here for a time actually, moved away subsequently, is on that flotilla. The president's sister is on it as well. But there have been some developments in terms of interception ETC. What's your take on these initiatives?
Well, I think the people that are on this, these activists, have to be applauded. They have to be acknowledged. It keeps the spotlight on Gaza, which I think is extremely important. It also shows the muscle of Israel when they can come out into the Mediterranean and intercept boats which are lawfully on the high seas, 800 or 1,000 miles away from Gaza. So, regardless of what the views are on it from the maritime perspective, it's quite interesting because the Israelis will make the point that they have a lawful blockade to prevent the smuggling of arms. Now, you or I may not accept that. I certainly don't do. But it is an argument that they can put up to justify this, or attempt to justify this blockade on the international law front, we will say. And then against that, the WHO quite rightly are saying that they need or would want to establish some type of a humanitarian corridor in order to get relief in, because relief is not accessing Gaza. And unfortunately, the world media has moved on, but that is just the reality. People are trying to eke out a living in atrocious conditions, you know, with medical supplies. Everything is needed in vast quantities, and there's a stranglehold on it by Israel. That is the belief, and I think it's probably borne out and by those that have evidenced it. So this flotilla, it's only, 170 plus activists, so maybe 20 odd boats. But once again, though, it brings the attention back on the situation in Gaza and hopefully then garnishes some support. Now, I was a little bit disappointed in our own response nationally. We have a lot of Irish nationals, quite rightly, you point out, taking part. And Spain are the only country really to come out and decry this and call them, make an official objection to the interception. Now, all these boats, most of them anyway, have now been headed back. I think they've been brought to Greece now. But there are still some out there and maybe trying to sail on. But this time, Israel are quite cute on it, in my belief, because they have cut them off so far out. There's an element of surprise. The last time there was a big build-up, you might remember, in October, it was going on for weeks, and people were watching it, seeing and tracking their progress, etc. And they got quite close, and it at that point it garnished an awful lot of international attention, and again, correctly so. This time around, they've moved out onto the high seas. But they will say, look, at this blockade, in their belief, was coming for another ulterior motive and not for humanitarian. So that's how they're going to try to justify it themselves. I don't believe they can. But for those that are on it, yes, they have to be applauded and supported. And we can't overlook, there's 70,000 plus Palestinian lives lost in them couple of years.
And of course, a lot of this is an information war. Israel's foreign ministry stated the operation was conducted peacefully and without any casualties. The flotilla organisers, though, said the raid was violent, saying Israeli forces disabled engines, jammed communications and left some participants stranded on broken vessels in the path of an approaching storm 600 miles from Gaza. And I get that. Do you ever wonder, or maybe you know the answer, why we talk about, obviously, Israel and its control of Gaza, and much of Israel runs along Gaza, yet there is land access via Turkey. Why is this? Why is there not greater movement from Gaza through Turkey? Why isn't there more movement of supports for Gazans, you know, through the land Turkish border? I understand. Listen, the flotilla themselves, they admit they're not bringing enough stuff to make a pick a difference, really. It's more to make a point. But I never understand this. They are hemmed in, but there is this Turkish border here.
About the geographic point, really, I think. But it comes back to what maybe I mentioned just at the outset, is that those points of entry, they are still controlled by the Israelis. And that is the issue, the difficulty. And that's when I say it is the grip that they have on that area, that they decide unilaterally what goes in and what comes out. And once that, and Gaza, it is along a strip, the best access may very well be by the sea if they were allowed to come in with the aid that's necessary, because they've got a very long stretch. But the way it is at presently, and who's going to call the Israelis to book, Greg? This is really...
Well, no one, and that's... Well, you referenced international...
That's a big issue, really. You know, well, we're just trying to highlight it, but who would call them to book?
Well, Spain have shown that you can... really, and I think the Spanish people, when history is rewritten, when history is written, they'll be held up in very high regard in this, while everyone has sat in their hands. The truth is, there's no international law. Bibi can do whatever he likes. His mate, Donald Trump, is doing the same in Iran. He's talked about destroying an entire civilization. He himself has a potentially illegal blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. It's the Wild West out there.
It is, yes. And unfortunately, it's got to a situation where I believe that nothing shocks us anymore. This is what is actually happening. You know, it moves the world's atrocities move on from A to B. We're now in Iran. We started maybe in Ukraine and moved to Gaza. And now we're in Iran. Consistently, though, and you do make this point, but you're right on this. Consistently, Spain have decried all these acts, so they have. They're the one country that stood head and shoulders above other Europeans and coming out and speaking out. And if Europe would at least get in behind them and have a common voice, it certainly would add some momentum to it. But who will hold them to the account? Sure, the International Criminal Court will say, look, they're investigating war crimes, but where will that ever go? Israel will say, look, we're entitled to this blockade. Sure, Trump can say the same thing. And this is the new world order or world disorder, and I think the latter is applicable.
And I think you are right. Let's get closer to home on some listeners' questions. Please ask Seamus, why is it taking 3 years to pay me $80,000 from my father's estate? Probate has been granted. They believe this is not acceptable.
Well, they should really get in contact with the executor or executors of the estate. They're the parties that are charged. So dealing with it, like in general terms in relation to probate, when probate issues, that is the official seal to give the authority to the people who are to administer an estate to gather in the assets and distribute them out in accordance with the will. Now, there can be reasons for delay. It could be a difficulty identifying assets, could be a difficulty collecting them in, and that can all lead to time, and a year or two can go by. 3 years can certainly go by. So the port of call, though, if they're looking for answers, is really the people who are responsible, and the parties that are charged with that are the executor or executors of the estate. So that's where they should direct their question. It is not unusual in dealing with estates that sort of period of time can arise. I like to think nowadays we have got very much more efficient. The court services are extremely good at turning around applications for grants and probates currently. So and that's a big improvement. But it is not unknown, and certainly the executors may be able to set them right on it. There can, and usually is, if it's a complicated estate, there can be those type of time periods involved. Mm. Not that extreme.
Yeah. Morning, Greg. Would you please ask Seamus? Our son was in an accident when he was very young, and it was settled in court. He's now turned 18. How does he access the money that's sitting in the court's bank, please and thanks?
Yeah, well, It's true. I think it's two avenues, Greg. Under the order, the monies that would have been awarded to him in compensation would have been lodged under the court services into the account held by them. So it's for his benefit on him reaching the age of his majority, and he's indicated that now he's come to that. So the two avenues I would suggest to him are he himself could prepare an affidavit and exhibit his birth certificate and lodge it with the court services and make an application to have the funds that are to his credit paid out to him. Or he can engage the services of a lawyer, solicitor, his own family firm or whatever, to attend to it for him, and obviously there'll be an applicable charge to that. But it's not overly cumbersome, and once he reaches the 18th birthday, he can certainly move ahead with it. But those are his options, I think.
This is kind of an interesting question, because it sounds to me like they don't have a actual basis for opposing this planning permission and are looking for reasons as to why, reasons to scupper it. But anyway, a caller from Northern Ireland has applied for planning permission in Donegal, claiming that they are resident here. They do have a holiday home here, but how do I prove they do not live here?
Oh, well, we go down the route of private investigators or something.
Well, see, that's it. I mean, is it not because the house is too white, or they don't like the design, or the roof is too high, you know, or it's because they simply want to prove a technicality? I don't know.
That's certainly up to them, and if they can produce evidence to that effect, that's the type of route you might have to be going down, bringing somebody on board, a third party, to check out the entire background. But you can't be abusing the planning process. Like, if there is a genuine concern of an objection, well, of course, you're within your rights to actually lodge that objection. And further, in certain circumstances, pursue it to onboard Planala. And interesting, though, at the moment, there is a move to reform the planning acts and planning legislation in relation to developments more in the line of large developments for housing, in light of the need for housing, because an awful lot of these developments can be delayed for upwards of years because of objections to planning, which go to Bord Pleanála, by the way. But then when Bord Pleanála make a decision, what's called a judicial review is sometimes taken by the objector or by the company that they act for or a representative body, which then brings it into the High Court, and there it can remain for some time until it's dealt with and judgment passed on it. And at that point, you're talking about escalating costs with developments, etc. So there's a big move on now to sort of curtail that and streamline it. But, I mean, if one has an objection, absolutely exercise their constitutional rights, but don't exercise them mischievously.
Last question. My car warranty is not being honoured because I'm 3,000 miles over the warranty specification for the first year. I had the car in to be serviced twice prior to this, and it was not mentioned. Can I fight it? Now, it depends who's the onus is on to keep an eye on your mileage and your warranty. But anyway, what say you, Seamus?
Yeah, it's interesting. My understanding is that these warranties have a mileage or a kilometre seal, and I know I'm subject to correction on this, or a year seal, whichever is the lesser, generally speaking. So if you come to your 100,000 kilometres within the 5 years, that's your warranty seal. But if you haven't passed it within the 5 years, your 5 years could be the seal. Now, that's my understanding of how they work, and they vary depending on your manufacturer. Some will go some 3, 5, or 7, whatever. So obviously you want to be well versed in that when you're putting your hand in your pocket to pay for a motor car. So, but as to where they stand, they have outlined the position that they're outside the actual warranty. So they do have a problem there. Can they fight it? Yes, maybe they can fight it, but they haven't indicated what the problem is. Now, if it was a major significant problem that went down to the whether or not this vehicle was suitable at all or had become dangerous as a result of a defect, a significant defect, Well, then I think that is an area that you could look at with regardless of the warranty, and maybe looking to the supplier of it in the first instance, who would then probably bring in the manufacturer. But it would have to be significant. If it was the warranty period and you're stuck to that, and it's something that would have been covered under the warranty, I think you could be in difficulties.
Lovely stuff, Seamus. Have a great weekend. People can check you out in Letterkenny and Remelton, McLaughlin Gun Solicitors, and of course, online as well, Seamus.
Yes, Greg, well, we should be there, gun.ie or donegalsolicitor.ie. Just look us up. We might even be there at the weekend.
Enjoy it, Seamus. Thank you. We have Shannon Wilkins in studio with us. Wilkins for Scroll Patrol. Hello.
Hi, Greg.
Now, I asked you, I said to you on Monday, I think when I came back to work after my break, I says, I really enjoyed your conversation with Donal. Lots of interaction there. And you says, yeah, Donal knows a lot about music and he likes music. And I went, okay, what do I know a lot about and what do I like? Because you were able to figure Donal out very quickly.
You like your lawnmower?
Yes.
And you like Betty, your robot Hoover. So maybe we'll dedicate the rest of the show to that.
But is that, you think that's the sum of my parts?
You like your boat. You do like rappers, but what is it? You like the West Coast ones, not the East Coast
ones?
Yeah,
well, yeah, okay.
Yeah. What else do you enjoy? Beer, but maybe I shouldn't say that.
You can say whatever you like.
What else do you like?
Right, okay, so there's plenty for us to chat about then. Thank you. You actually know quite a bit. I'm impressed.
I do. We spend a lot of time together.
Long journeys. Think about it. Nicola Coughlan has been quite busy, even after all the hoo-ha. She was in... What's that show?
Bridgerton was her main one.
That was her breakout after Derry Girls, really, wasn't it?
It was, and she's doing a stage adaptation of a play at the moment as well.
Okay, and the Dish podcast, what's this? She's on that.
So this is actually a podcast all about food.
Oh,
I love food.
You do.
But she put a wee bit out there about RIP.ie. So she used to work in an optician's in Galway.
Right.
And she'd be ringing people, hello, I'm just ringing you because you need an appointment. It's been 2 years since your last eye test. And people would be crying on the phone, this person is dead. And she was like, I can't take any more of this. So before she would go and ring the person, she would search RIP.
Good idea.
And then take
actually
a look at what year they were born and the names. But she said, funnily enough, the nuns were always still alive.
Mm.
It didn't matter what age they were. She says, nuns are immortal.
It goes to show to their lifestyle, because they do have great longevity, no doubt about that. And at least she had the sensitivity, because I know it's a light-hearted story of hers, but it does bother people. It's a horrible call to get.
Definitely.
Right, what happens to Instagram after you die, or any of our social medias for that matter?
I know that I have seen in the past Facebook, you can do an in memoriam. I don't know, do you do that yourself before you die, or do your family request it? But now Instagram...
I would like it to be like Mission Impossible, do you know, where everything self-destructs 5 seconds after you die?
Just imagine. No photos of Greg. Greg didn't exist. No social media presence. But you can go into your Instagram, into the manage account, and there's